Hello, everyone. This is your host, Raquel Opion. Hi, good afternoon, everyone. This is a special edition of Imploding the Illusion. I'm your host, Raquel Opion. This is Reach Out America Radio. We're going to be talking about the Hammonds in Oregon, an Oregon family who are fighting the federal government. The Bundy Ranch people have also occupied a federal building in Oregon. They were there to, I think, assist the Hammonds, but I don't know whether the Hammonds are agreeable to what's going on. So I have Chuck Williams, our resident expert on these type of crisis situations. He is calling in shortly, and I'm going to actually just put on a little tiny intro so I can go about sharing. I just posted this right now. I want to go about sharing it on Facebook to get callers, and then I also want to bring in I'm going to bring in Chuck Williams and Emery, who is a reporter out of Idaho, who is on site and just had a recent press conference on the whole situation. So I want to update you. Just enjoy the music for about a minute. Famous guitarist Joe Satriani, Big Bad Moon. Hey, Chuck, is that you? Can you hear me?
Yep. Yes, it is. I can hear you.
Awesome. Okay, welcome. We're running a little tiny bit late. I know we tried to get started at 3:30 p.m. Eastern. But just to let the listeners know, this is an emergency program that we just put together literally 15 minutes ago, and I have our resident expert, Chuck Williams, which is an alias name for security reasons. However, I will vouch for his expertise in the topic of crisis management, both national and international. He said he has an update for us. If you don't know what's going on today, let me tell you. We have a family in Oregon. They're called the Hammonds. They were part of a group that put together a people's grand jury. And the reason why that was because they wanted to issue presentments, which is similar to what an indictment would be, against certain officials who are committing crimes. And rather than the local law enforcement, rather than them investigating the actual presentments of people committing crimes, instead they went ahead and charged the Hammonds instead. So, like, this is the bottom story. This is what happened. Now, as this is going on, the Bundy people, they have come in for assistance. They've been there for several weeks, but in the past 24 hours, they've literally taken over a federal building. Now, I'm hearing on the ground that the Hammonds turned themselves in because they are not really part of what the Bundys are doing. I don't know whether they agree or disagree. I'm not sure where they're at right now, but I do know that the Bundy takeover of the federal building really doesn't have anything to – is not directed at the hands of the Hammonds. You know, so that's what I know now, and I'm bringing in somebody else also, Chuck, and that's Michael Emery, and I know you've met him before because he's been on the show at the same time as you. And while you're talking, I'm going to go ahead and try to get him on too, because he's on the ground. He participated in a press conference recently, so he'll be able to give us some updates there too. So I I want to go ahead and give you the floor. I know you have a lot of things to talk about, so tell us what's going on from your perspective.
Okay. First of all, thank you for having me. Thank you for organizing this emergency broadcast, because there's a lot of machinery that's at work. Again, like I always talk about, there's a lot of machinery that's at work that we just can't see. You know, there's surface-level stuff, but there's things happening in the background that people may not be aware of if they're just looking at one focal viewpoint. The issue that I have with this, now, first of all, let me say that I agree with standing up for your rights. I agree with, you know, I take the underdog position. Like, you know, they're picking on me. I got to defend myself at all costs. I'm with that. The problem that I have with this is how this is executed. Now, you know, there's a lot of baggage left and right, and I'm going to try to focus on exactly what I want to say. And like I said, there's a lot that I have to say, so I just hope that I cover all the bases. And let me just say, first of all, I'm on my cell phone. So if I get disconnected, I'll call you right back. But there's other things that I'm going to be doing in the background. So it'll be okay so far.
Yes, you're a little bit low, but I still can hear you okay. I just want you to be aware of that.
Okay. Now, first of all, the issue that I have is that, you know, first of all, I agree with their stand. I do think that if you are being picked on, if you are having your land taken, you need to stand up for your rights. What I have a problem with is the way that this is executed. First of all, you know, whenever there is a situation, you have to figure out the best course of action to take. You know, you've always heard that when the administration says that, oh, we're pondering on doing something in the world, you know, against maybe Iraq or whatever, and all options are on the table. What I say to these people that are armed in this building is that, did you think about all of your options before you went to this step? I know that, you know, we let emotions get to the best of us at times, and we feel like we just got to jump on a bandwagon. I'm not trying to steal your thunder. I'm not trying to stop you from sticking up for what you believe is right. But what I will say is that the method that you're choosing to do it, there are other options that could give you the same result. Now, I have a problem with this whole thing because these other options were not explored. They weren't even discussed because we, as a Patriot Network, are so fragmented, and, you know, some of us are in each other's states, and, you know, we just have no method of communication. But this, what they're doing now, affords them much more opportunity for a negative response from the government and from the society as a whole. Now, if I'm a guy and I'm just sitting in my home and the government says, you know what, we just invoked an eminent domain and we're taking your home. That guy gets a gun and says, you know what, I pay for my home, it's mine, you know what, I'm on his side. Because to me, if I'm a law-abiding citizen, you shouldn't be able to take anything from me. I'm standing on something that is mine, that I paid for, that I worked 30 years, 40 years to pay off my mortgage, and you shouldn't be taking anything from me. That I'm all for. The issue that I have with this is they are currently occupying a building that they have no connection to. It's not theirs. Typically, you know, honestly, it belongs to the people of the United States. It's our federal land. It is a building that does not sway the U.S. government in any respect. You know, it doesn't stop them from getting paid, and that's what you really have to hit, is the fact that they're being paid, the fact that they're being elected. And to me, when you go to the cartridge box, that should be the absolute last resort. In other words, everything else has tried and failed, and now they're still coming to get us. And that's not what I have seen here. I don't want to malign their character. I believe that they probably are good guys. I believe that they want to stick up for what's right. But the method in which they're doing it in, especially now since the president wants to come out against guns, whatever he says, you're giving him legitimacy. And that's what we don't want to give the system. Anything that they say that they want to do, they have to appear legitimate. So now you've just given him a big, huge box of legitimacy to whatever he wants to say, and especially if it goes violent. That's not what we want. You know, second of all, you do have people that are in the government that know what we know, see what we see. And as a matter of fact, they probably see it more than we do. And what you do is you have those people that are probably being deployed there to try to defuse a situation and or enforce the laws, and what you're going to do is you're going to shoot some of those people who are going to end up being on your side. And that's not what we want. We want everybody to come home nice and safe. What we need is the tyranny to go away. We don't want to, Raquel, I'm just beside myself because I feel like this is a very bad situation to put themselves. They put themselves in a situation where they don't have an exit strategy. And I would say to them right now, you have just decided to take over a building armed, and what are you going to do now? What do you expect the system to do now? Say, hey, they took over the building. We better just give in to their demands. No, absolutely not. What you've done is you've given the system a method, a vehicle, an opportunity to act badly. And what they're going to do is they're going to take that forward and they're going to say, you know what? Oh, everybody owns guns like that. They're bad. So now we got to just take everybody's guns. You just never know how your actions are actually going to shoot yourself in the foot. And if I had their ear right now, I would just tell them, like, look, hey, I appreciate it. I appreciate what you're doing. Save the fight for another day. You've made your point. If your objective was to call attention to what's going on to the Hammonds and the fact that the U.S. government is not abiding by the Constitution and they're just stealing other people's land that don't belong to them, you have done that. You have completed your objective. Now stand down, save the weapons, save the ammo, and, save it for another day. Because anything further than this is going to play into the hands of the system. That's not what we want. We don't want bloodshed.
Do you think there's a possibility? Do you think there's a possibility that they will stand down under the circumstances? Because, what they did actually pushed Mr. Hammond and his son to turn themselves in, okay? And the reason being is that I think that I don't, I can't speak for them, but I understand through another party that they weren't. This is not their doing, right? They had no intention of taking over, occupying a federal building. Their intention actually is a militia that they have put together. The militia is not to fight people. The militia is to execute on the presentments of the accusations of criminal behavior on the part of officials. And doing it that way is the common law way. So that there's nothing legally wrong with the way that the Hammonds were pursuing this. I think that the Bundys, I know that the Bundys came in because they wanted to assist them, because while their situations were different, there still was a commonality to the two different cases. And they went in there to assist, and then basically maybe they wanted to just take over. I mean, does there come a point in time where they see that the Hammonds already turned themselves in? Okay, like you said, this is not, they're not defending their own property. They're defending property that's not owned by them. This could very well be an opening for the government to say, okay, you see why we have to take your guns? Because of these nuts. Like you said, this actually can create a worse situation. Do you think under circumstances that Bundy is there a window there for them to step down?
I think that if they look at their tactical situation, first of all, because I'm a tactics guy. I know very few people who look at life the way that I do. So first of all, they've occupied a building that is not well traveled by the American people. It's not like next to a big huge road or anything like that. It's kind of out in the middle of the woods. It's set off a bit. So what I'm assuming that the police and FBI have done is they have a perimeter established around the compound or the headquarters, most likely with very, very specially trained troops, very special equipment. They've got drones currently flying over the area. So there's probably a lot of equipment that is probably bound to end up there, along with APC. So the government's probably going to dig in for a fight. And if not, they're going to reassess the situation and come to terms with that's what they should do anyway. And that's what I'm saying, is that you shouldn't force the government in this respect, in this tone, in a combative stance over something that's really not yours. You know what I mean? Like I said, it's different if you're fighting over your own house. But what I'm basically describing to you is the perception that this gives the American people and to the government. You don't want to give them legitimacy, first of all, and then you don't want the average American Joe who doesn't really know anything about this, doesn't know what side he should be on, to say, hey, you know what? These guys went and they took over this freaking place with guns. Was that really necessary? You know, the old adage is never argue with the fool because other people don't know the difference. Now, I'm saying to you right now, if a government is tyrannical and then you go do something stupid, nobody knows the difference. You know, there has to be a clear defining line. And I'll put it to you in terms of a kiddie type of cartoon, Transformers. You know the archetype of Optimus Prime. He's a do-gooder. He's a Boy Scout. He's a robotic Boy Scout. Can you ever see him pimping some girl on a corner? No, because that's contra to what we know about him. Likewise, and I'm sorry to reduce it to the level of Hollywood, but we have to be that archetype of we do the right thing and the government does the wrong thing. We can't come out and say we're going to take over this land and it's really not ours. You know, it's not deeded to us. It's not in our name, but we're going to do it anyway. And we're still somehow going to be looking like the right guys. That's the wrong objective. It's the wrong viewpoint to take, and that's not the action that we want to take. And like I said, if I had their ear right now, I would tell them before the bloodshed starts, can guarantee you that it's the highest probability of any, you know, government versus civilian shootout we've ever had. It's the highest probability we're looking at right now. Just stand down. I didn't say turn your weapons over. I would say just stand down. You've made your point. We have national coverage on this right now, and that's what you want. That's the best and most and less lethal objective that you could wish for in this scenario. You've done your job. Stand down. Let's go home, and let's rework the problem a different way, and that's what I would say. Now, if they don't, and this is the dangerous part about it, if they don't, worst case scenario, there's a shootout where there's federal agents, and like I said, the government is also, there's some people that are on your side. You know, they see what they see what you see, they know what you know, and to a certain extent, they know more than what you know because they're in the system. If there's a shootout or there's bloodshed because of something that civilians started, that gives the system legitimacy. It gives them a carte blanche to ramp up the police state even more. It gives the system, because what happens after every shootout is that they have an after action report where they look and see what could they do better next time. And, you know, this type of reporting goes on for decades. You know, they go back decades. What they're going to look and see is if they get their butts handed to them, how they're going to respond to this issue next. In other words, they're going to set up rules for engagement for armed citizens, okay? And that's not really what we want. We don't want
no,
to push
it's not.
Them.
Right.
We don't want to push them to where they manipulate and they transform how they treat us. Even though it's bad now, it could be double worse after this is over with. Like Columbine changed the way law enforcement decided to treat mass casualties, mass shooting, this could actually change the rules of engagement for how they deal with the American people. That's a bad thing because that's an evolution of, you know, something that they're working toward anyway. So this is very problematic, and I hope that somebody up there is listening. And like I said, I'm not trying to, you know, put them down. I admire them, their stand and everything, but I'm just simply saying that the position offers them far more opportunity for a violent and negative end rather than a positive one, which we all need.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. Let me ask you this, though. If they did not hand over their arms and they did stand down, wouldn't that create a situation where the feds are just going to, you know, start arresting them? I mean, they're going to get arrested just for the occupation itself. And then what happens? You know, like you said, then they start a whole new process about how they deal with armed insurgents, and that that process is going to be, you know, not good, right? So it's going to go into the direction that we don't want them to go into the direction, and that's that the United States government is fighting us, right? They're fighting us. Like, the people have to realize that. It's not, you know, liberals against conservatives. It's us, the people, against the government, because there's been a move for maybe, you know, 15, 20 years now for people to be soft on the idea that anyone can be a criminal, right? But meanwhile, criminals statistically are men, and they're men between the ages of 18 and 29.
Right.
And that hasn't changed much, on top of which crime rates have been going down since the 1970s. And then what do the prisons do? Well, they need people to fund the prisons, because prisons are nationally privatized. So how do they make a profit? Well, the only way that the prisons can make a profit is by numbers. So if we don't have the criminals, well, we're going to have to invent them. And guess what the government wants? Well, they want all of us. They want gun owners to be criminals. They want jaywalkers to be criminals. They want anybody, any age, any sex, to be considered a possible, now I'm going to take it a step forward, terrorist. Because now if they put the label terrorist on anybody, okay, this could be a law-abiding citizen who's done nothing wrong their whole life, but the government decides, we think you're a terrorist, and then they get put into jail, no due process, the Constitution out the window, forget about your rights, you have none as an American citizen. And that's what I think you and I have been talking about for the past few months. So what I'm trying to do is educate the public and basically, you know, let them know, keep your eyes open. And no, like you said earlier, it's not that everyone working in the federal government is against us. No, the people in the government that know what the plans are to make anybody they want, okay, it doesn't mean anybody, but it means anybody they want to target, they can call them a terrorist, and then your rights are done. You're done. You go to jail. You could be murdered. You could be tortured. It doesn't. They do whatever they want because they called you a terrorist. This is what we want to avoid. Now, if they try to turn Bundys, now I think what the government will do is just try to call Bundys terrorists, and then they're gonna incarcerate them. I don't think a stand down is going to just, you know, make the federal government go away.
It probably won't, but here's what I'm going to say going from this point to the future. No matter what happens, if there's civil disobedience that people are calling for violence, you have to give that a second thought, because you have to see, first of all, are you being provocateured? Is that the actual and the best option that you have at the time amongst other options? And that's one thing that I'm stressing right now, is that you have to make sure that the course of action that you take is the best one. It's the brightest and the best one, because if somebody can walk up to you and say, you know what, you didn't think of this or you didn't think of that, that means that what you decided to do was not the best course of action. That means that you should have given it a little bit more time. Don't react out of emotion. Now, like, again, I don't, you know, the government is taking these people's land. We know why they're doing it. You know, China's in the background, and there's minerals and mineral rights. They're fighting. That's what the government wants. But the fact that you have to be smarter when you're dealing with the government, because I guarantee you, the government has the highest amount of very educated people. This is PhD level evil that the American people are dealing with. Okay, I guarantee you, they are the smartest people on planet Earth. So if you do something stupid, 9 times out of 10, they plan for you to do something stupid because you don't know how smart they are. Now, I'm not saying that we can't fight them. I'm saying that you have to be just as smart as them. And this move to occupy this building, I would have told them, listen, there's other ways to do it. There's other better ways to do this. If you want to call attention to what's going on, there's better ways to do it. Use your tools peaceably, because I'm going to tell you right now, the next step is, and there are two things that I want to make sure that everybody knows, okay? The next step is to link up the militia movement with ISIS. The Homeland Security is going to say that they are just as deadly, if not more, than ISIS. So ISIS is no longer the problem. Now, Homeland Security is going to focus on militias, focus on people that are armed, focus on people that don't like the fact that the government is taking people's land and you know, they want to fight about it.
That's number one, and that's to be avoided. Number two, basically, is the fact that all these terrorism powers that they've illegally taken for themselves against the Constitution, now they get a chance to use them. The fact that there's a and I'm sorry that I don't have the name of the law, because this was a very quick a radio show that we just put together. There's a law that was recently passed where the government has given itself permission to execute American citizens. And you might remember something of this where there was a man in Pakistan or something like that, or a son. I don't remember the exact story about it, but, you know, he was an American citizen, and a drone struck him, and it killed him. And the Obama administration cited this law and says, you know what, we can do this. So what I'm saying to you is
that's incredible.
Right. You don't want to give them the opportunity to use their toys, because I'm going to tell you right now, there's two. If it looks like these guys are proficient in defending themselves, which I would say that the American people are, they're the most highly trained civilian force on planet Earth that can shoot straight. And that's, by the way, the reason why the Iraqi army lost, because they couldn't shoot. We are the most highly trained civilian force on planet Earth. If it looks like the government's going to lose, they can just drone strike the whole building.
Wow.
Stay closed. And they can do
right.
that. They can legally do that. All they have to do is just classify everybody terrorists and bomb the whole building. That's not what we want. I want everybody to come home safe. I want the Hammonds and everybody to maintain and keep what they legally have in their name, meaning their land and their happiness. I want all the guys that are there in arms that want to stick up for what's right, I want them to come home to their families. And I want the agents that are being sent there that you don't know are on your side, I want them to go home to their families. So I want a win-win-win for everybody. When you go to the cartridge box, there is no win-win-win for everybody.
Right, right. I agree. And I also want to just, again, just reiterate the point, the underlying case here. Because the Hammonds were seeking a means to get justice without the cartridge. So they were seeking through people's grand jury. And the reason why many of us have resorted to the people's grand jury is because the way the justice system is set up right now, the people's grand jury is not operating successfully, or the grand jury, because according to common law, the grand jury is literally above a 25-member grand jury in the United States of America is above the U.S. Supreme Court. We are,
right.
as an entity, we are above everyone, and that's written in common law, okay? So what they did in that town where Hammond's from, they basically put together their own people's grand jury, not affected by prosecution, by a prosecutor, not affected by the judicial system. And that's another component of a real legal grand jury, which is that the grand jury is not supposed to be influenced by prosecutors. It's not supposed to be influenced by judges. And in fact, not only can they determine whether the indictment or presentment is accurate or not, okay, that they have a case, some probable cause against somebody, but they also can determine that the law itself is unconstitutional and let the person free. Okay, so, you know, there's a double protection there for the people. So the people can say, a 25-member grand jury looking at evidence can say, nope. First of all, the Hammonds, just for instance, let's put the Hammonds in there. The Hammonds own the property. The government is wrong. We can't say the Bund, you know, say that the Hammonds were before a grand jury. The grand jury can decide that they didn't do anything wrong. The grand jury can decide that the law was unconstitutional to begin with, and the grand jury can dismiss the complaint. Now, that's not what we have today. It's operating illegally, in my opinion. And that is because the grand jury is completely influenced. Every single grand jury is influenced by a judge and a prosecutor. So
right.
that's why you see indictments. It's like, you know, the saying, a prosecutor can convict a ham sandwich. A good prosecutor, a good effective prosecutor can convict a ham sandwich. In the reverse,
right.
a good prosecutor can save a public official from being indicted. And we
right.
see that all over the country, examples of that. So what the Hammonds did was they said, no, we got this, and we're going to do it lawfully. We're going to put together our own people's grand jury, 25 members. And they did, right? They have presentments, and Michael Emery is going to come on, who's on site in Oregon, who was present at the conference. I'm just waiting for him to call in, and he'll give us an update. So the only other component that they need is the problem with the people's grand juries and their presentments, which is just about identical to an indictment, except it's called a presentment under common law, is that they file it with the clerk of the court on public record. That's fine. You can do that easily. But they take their presentment to the sheriff, to the law enforcement department, to the police department in the area. And that sheriff is supposed to go pick them up. We have an indictment. We have a presentment. This person potentially did something illegal. We have to go not prosecute them, but we have to go arrest them and then bring them before a court of law, before a jury of their peers, right? Which is the second
right.
step. But the sheriffs or the PDs, they're not doing it, right? They're taking these presentments. Okay, and I know it happened in Florida, in Dixie County. They took the presentment and they gave it to the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, who turned around and charged the foreman of the people's grand jury with a crime. So what they're doing is that they're turning whistleblowers into criminals, and that's how they're getting away with it. So what do we do then? Well, the Hammond says, okay, well, we're going to put together our own militia that's going to go and make people's arrests, which we can do under law, against these officials because of the presentment that the grand jury has presented. That, Chuck and everyone, is lawful.
Right.
And I think that's
right.
the way to go. Now, there's other people's grand juries groups that want to do it differently. So they don't want to work with militias. They want to work with, going after the insurance companies that represent the public officials, because they all have insurance. So there's a couple of different ways, being contemplated. But what the Bundy people do, and no offense against them either, I agree with you. You got to stick up for yourself. I mean, you have to stick up for your property. You got to be strong. You got to be tough. You got to be armed. I agree with that.
Right.
But at the same token, I agree with you, Chuck, because how they're going about it is, I think, wrong. Because, like you said, they've created a situation where legally they're in the wrong, okay, because they've taken over a building that is not their property.
Right.
Secondly, now this opens the door for the government to now make up a whole bunch of new rules that totally screw us, just same way they did at Columbine. It's the same thing they do with any other major problems, is that they want to take away innocent, law-abiding citizens' rights away. So they say, well,
right.
if they can do it, you can do it, and now we have to check everybody's phone calls, kind of thing. It's what's going on in America. So, yeah, I'm really concerned, and I also want everyone to go home safe, including the federal employees. And I think that the people can fight this as they should, but they can do it lawfully through a people's grand jury, and whether it's a militia or whether it's going after the insurance companies, one way or the other, great minds can figure this out, and we can. But what we have right now, like you said, with the Bundy sort of takeover, I already know that the Hammonds are not a party to the takeover because of this, they've already turned themselves in. Okay, so
right.
while they had their militia prepared to execute on the indictments, they decided that it was their best course of action to turn themselves in, because they probably want, and this is I'm guessing, but Michael Emery will be able to confirm this, but I'm guessing that they want to take a step back from what the Bundy group is doing.
Right.
Because it wasn't the Hammond. It's not the Hammonds directing them. Okay. They're doing their own thing right now in Oregon.
Right.
It's
right.
scary.
You know, I and like I said, this has national ramifications. And, you know, I know Obama's probably sitting in the White House right now thinking, like, how can he use what's happening to aid him? And like I said, they always want to use every crisis that comes across their desk or comes across, you know, the United States to help them. So what are you really doing? You know, I appreciate the fact that you want to stand up for yourself, but worst case scenario, it only takes one person to fire a shot, even by accident, to get everybody else shooting. So then
that's
now
absolutely right.
You have side one shooting at side two, and that's not what we want. That's the ultimate thing that you avoid, because it's not like that land that they're shooting on, they're going to keep. Everybody's leaving that. It's not even, it doesn't belong to anybody. So what should have happened is they should have targeted the actual power structure that's trying to do something illegally, which is the prosecutors. You know, stay the
right.
sit-in. You know, arrest them. You know, grand jury, send people to arrest them. Work the system. Be smarter than
Correct.
They expect you to be. These
right.
people, like I said, are PhD-level evil. Outsmart them. They don't think that much of us anyway. So what do? They're going to sit back and wait for you to mess up so they can say, hey, you know what? Now we're going to appear legitimate because we have to respond to these idiots, you know, these so-called idiots, these guys with guns, blah, blah, blah. Not that I believe that they're idiots. I'm just saying what they are saying amongst themselves and within the system. So how do we get out of it? Okay, here's the issue is that I never – want to say to get into something without an exit door. You know, you know, when you go into a room, I look for the exits. How many exits are there? Do the windows open? Things like that. That's just my training. That's just how I think. Procedurally, you have to think the same way. If you engage or have intent to engage someone in a fight, and let me reduce it to an analogy, okay? You're in a bar. And there's a bully, and he's messing around with all the women, and he's picking with people, and he's a big guy, and he's really being a jerk. So either you can take the high road by doing the right thing, by calling the cops and say, hey, this guy's screwing with everybody, or you can walk up to him and do the wrong thing and punch him in his face. Now, you might be justified. He might deserve it. But then it gives him the opportunity to call the cops on you. And now you're the bad guy. Now, taking that dynamic and that analogy and applying it to this, somebody does need to put the government in its place so that they won't stop doing the things that they're doing, not just by taking people's land, by taking people's rights, by indefinite detention in Chicago, by non-constitutional zones all around the perimeter of this country, and that and then some. But how you go about it is just as important as if you go about it at all. You cannot be stupid. You have to think this out. You have to calculate and say, if I do this, how will that help the other side? And I'm going to tell you right now, this is a gold mine for the Obama administration. You may think, you know, people may argue with me, but I'm telling you, if there's a shot fired in anger and if somebody that gets killed, they're going to say, you know what, this is why we got to do what we do. This is why we have the police state system. This is why we have the NSA going through all your records to make sure that you're not a terrorist. This is why. They're going to have all these things already lined up, and they're going to appear legitimate, and that's what you want to snatch out of their hands. You have to outthink them. And this is what these guys did not do. They didn't outthink them. They acted on emotion, they got the guns, and they ran down there, and they occupied a building that none of them owned.
Right. Okay, just hold right there. There's several callers live on the line. One of them I'm going to bring in right away. He's a colleague of mine, Etta Robertson. He already interviewed Michael Emery, who's going to be coming on the program shortly. So he did a program just about an hour ago. So I'm going to let him give us an update. And in the meantime, the other callers on the line, if you have a question or a comment you want to make, you're welcome on the program. Just dial 1, and that indicates to me that you want to come on. And then just give me a few minutes to get you on, because I know we have a few callers on live. I'm going to go ahead and bring in Etta. I don't know if you want to be referred to as Etta or do you want to be referred to as Brian? Hey,
Etta,
Brian, you're live. Ed is fine?
Yeah, Edda, Edda is my wife. Okay, my name is Brian.
Brian, yeah.
I thought you told me
Edda was a nickname.
It is. It's for my wife.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
I apologize then.
That is fine. So I agree with what he's saying, and it's bad timing. That's what I'm worried about. If you look at CNN and even Fox kind of plays it down some, all the mainstream media is talking about how – I was talking to Michael Emery earlier, and one of the things I told him, I said, it's really bad timing. You go back to the Boston bombing, the very initial day. Who did they blame the Boston bombing on? They tried to say it was some right-wing conservative white person. Well, that didn't last a full day, okay? Then you go through all the different narratives of minor events that's happened or major events, and the most recent was San Bernardino and how CNN tried to push the narrative that it was some right-wing conservative white guy. They're constantly putting out that white people with guns are dangerous. Your guest is absolutely spot on that if something happens, they're going to blame it on white people. So if they're going to go through with this, they need to really be aware of their surroundings, the people that are there, because the government has been caught on numerous occasions doing agent provocateurs. They get one of their people in place that fires the first shot. There goes the ball game right there. That's what I'm really concerned about.
Exactly. Exactly, and once they decide to invoke the terrorism powers, then now they can use drones and missiles. And I'm sorry, I mean, like I said, I really appreciate their stand, but I want everybody to come home safe. There's a better way to do this, and I don't know.
I'm hearing very similar stuff. I'm reading very similar stuff on this Facebook thread. This is an unfortunate gift to the opposition. Right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Bo Keller. Also, I see a post from oathkeepers.org. The Hammond family does not want an arm stand off, which I assumed and I've been talking about. And I think that's part of the reason why the Hammond dad and son actually turned themselves in. I think that they're trying to separate themselves from the Bundy family, from the Bundy people. Now, my question is, now, what if? So we don't know, you know, what their plan is, right? So they're there, they're occupying the building. What if they do have an exit plan? We don't know about it. Is that possible?
Mike, you want to take this one, and I'll finish after you?
That's Brian. Mike's not on yet.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Brian, do you want to take this, and I'll finish?
Yeah.
Do you think it's possible they have a plan?
The Hammonds? No.
No, not the Hammonds. I'm talking about the Bundys. Because,
Bundys,
you know, this is on them right now, yes.
I don't know who's running the psychological operation. I don't know who's giving them – I call it a psychological operation because we really don't know who's running the show. The figurehead is the Bundy brothers, okay? They are the ones that are the spokesperson. But who's directing them behind the scenes? Because why would you say you were there for the long haul? There have been statements made that if it goes violence, they're prepared for violence. They are not planning on going nowhere. If you were going to do a protest, that's fine, because what the Hammonds have went through is wrong. The Hammonds did nothing wrong, and they're being railroaded. So a protest is justified, but to carry it to this level and the timing of it, who is running the narrative? That's the question I got.
Could it be like an agent provocateur? Could it be a false flag? Could it be, is that what's the imminent danger here, that whoever is occupying those buildings is, you know, put there for a reason? That's something that's being inferred right now on my Facebook page. There is no direction, there is no direction, quote-unquote, behind the Bundys. They are self-acting.
Raquel.
Yeah.
Raquel, listen, I look at history as my guide, and I've had a wealth of historical points already for you, but I'm going to just name a few of them. What's happening right now is something that's called siege warfare. It's very old. The Romans used to do it. Genghis Khan used to do it. The Huns used to do it. And it just the dynamics of this fighting goes like this. You have Group A that's holed up in a fort or some type of fortification, and Group B surrounds them. Now, if you're at a disadvantage being in the center, being surrounded, they have the other force has all day, all year, all month to figure out how to get inside you, how to get in there and kill you off. Look at the Maginot Line in World War II, the start of World War II. Old Frenchmen had the thinking of World War I and tried to apply it to World War II. The Germans just simply went around the line. They had all day long to figure out how do we get around this fixed fortification. Keeping that methodology and the method and the dynamics in mind, when you occupy a fixed position, that gives the enemy all day to, first of all, surround you, to deny you food, to deny you water, to deny you electricity, to deny you communications. You're actually putting yourself at a very big disadvantage. There's 1,000 years worth of history that shows that people that take on this mentality of I'm just going to hunker down and I'll be okay, it never ends okay. I mean, there's very few instances in history where a defender of a fixed position actually came out on top. I do exclude the Battle of the Bulge, Bastogne. That was one of the things that the shining jewel of the siege mentality doctrine that actually turned out okay for the Big Red One in World War II. Everything else, pretty much, is if you occupy a fixed position, count on being overrun. Even, Vietnam, Dien Bien Phu. The French had a base there, and all the Vietnamese did is just line the hills and shoot the base, bomb the base. And I can guarantee you that the government is surrounding or establishing a perimeter around where these armed men are. So the dynamics of the situation are that it's not going to turn out well for the guys, no matter how well-intentioned they are. They're going to run out of food. They're going to run out of water. They're going to run out of electricity because they're probably going to cut the lines. They're going to jam the cell phone so nobody knows what's going on in there. So basically they're at a disadvantage. They just don't know it. So,
well,
that's scary. I have somebody who's been listening in from the beginning of the program and also commenting on Facebook. He's a Facebook friend of mine, Bo Kelleher. I'm going to bring him on to either ask a question or make a comment. Bo, you there?
Hi, Raquel. Thank you very much for having me on. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. You want to go ahead and just give us your perspective?
Yeah.
Could you just introduce yourself, one or two lines?
Yeah, sure. My name is Bo Kelleher. I've been a liberty activist since the 2008 days of the Paul campaign. And, I've been a constitutionalist and really cared about constitutional law, especially as it comes down to local land issues. I've got some expertise
Excellent.
In
Thank
land,
you.
Land issues. Thank you.
Great. Okay, go ahead, Bo.
Yeah, so, looking at the synergies between what happened between the Bundys and the Hammonds, I think the Bundys saw a kindred spirit there. With having issues with the BLM, and they thought, hey, your problem is my problem. And although they seem similar, the approaches there were very different. And the Hammonds were looking to handle things in a very different way. Although I got to tell you, I definitely appreciate the way the Bundys handled things that went down in Bunkerville. I found that to be an impressive stand against federalism. And I was actually surprised when this thing got started that the Hammonds did not kind of align themselves with the Bundys. Although I do agree with your guest and with some other callers that this is not an opportune time, especially when you consider the political climate.
Yeah, I think that, we're sort of all on the same page here.
Yeah, the other thing I think is very interesting about this is that when you look at the land use issues, I heard your guest indicate that this is quote unquote federal land, and that's something that when we look at the land clause in the Constitution, that Congress has the power to grant that, but. Really, when we look at that versus the 10th Amendment, we have actually a contradiction in the Constitution that has never really been settled by the Supreme Court in a way that's satisfactory to most anti-federalists, in the sense that if you're looking at does the land belong to a state or a county or the federal government when it comes down to land use issues, or even does it belong to a private party that has occupied and used that land for a considerable amount of time, I think we've got, kind of four competing entities there if you look at it in that perspective. And the courts have really kind of wavered in the way they've dealt with land use issues. Very different land use issues that were in play in the Bundy situation in Bunkerville, as opposed to the land use issues that were in play with the Hammonds. But there were some similarities in the fact that you've got a BLM that basically is ringing these ranchers. They're buying out all of their fellow ranchers, and they're attempting to grab these lands. Now, there's been a lot of conspiracy theories about uranium ore and Chinese buyers and all this other stuff out there. I think it's a lot of hogwash, to be honest. I think the simple issue of federal control over things is much more explanatory.
Now, can I ask your guest a question since he's studied constitutional law and stuff like that? I've been studying law now for about a little over 3.5 years. I come across the legal doctrine called legal fiction. My understanding of legal fiction, government is considered a legal fiction. Is it not true that a legal fiction technically cannot own property?
Not according to the Kelo decision. The Kelo decision basically made it so that a fictional entity could own property, that in effect corporations are people, as Mitt Romney famously said. And the Kelo decision effectively granted personhood to corporations. So if you understand that the United States of America is in and of itself a corporation, then you can understand that
right.
That corporation as a person, as a corporate person, can actually own property. And this is a far, far, far departure from originalism, from the originalist interpretation of the Constitution. And anybody who holds an originalist or anti-federalist position would take great umbrage with that.
And I guess I need to go look at that Kelo decision. I have heard it a lot because even Trump liked that decision. But I've never went and read it. But I know anybody who's been studying law for any length of time, not just someone that's been doing it for 5 minutes, they know about the 1871 Washington, D.C. Organic Act, which created Washington, D.C. as a corporation or a municipality, and that started the downhill slide to where we are today.
Yeah, the Constitution itself actually allocated the provision of, and this was due to the arguments of the Federalists. If you read the Federalist Papers, there was a strong desire to keep Washington D.C. completely separate from any state entity and from any state oversight. So they created a 10 square mile provision for the District of Columbia to be a completely independent entity. And in fact, a lot of constitutionalists argue that the District of Columbia should not have its own representation, that it should not actually have standing in Congress. There's a lot of concern about that. But I think that the big issue when it comes to federalism and when it comes to the federal ownership of property is really the property clause. And the property clause is found in Article 4, Section 3, Clause 2. And effectively what the property clause says is the Congress shall have the power to dispose of and make all needful rules and regulations respecting the territory or other property belonging to the United States. This is a very, very confusing part of the Constitution. It's probably one of the most misunderstood parts of the Constitution. One could argue that it's even more misunderstood than the Second Amendment. Because what it says is is actually an enigma wrapped in a riddle when it says that property belonging to the United States, it's actually defining itself by defining itself. And this is actually bad law. So we actually have a fundamental defect in the Constitution in the property clause. And the courts have never really dealt with the fact that a law cannot define itself. It has to actually rely upon a previous legal definition in order to be defined, or a common definition to be defined. And the problem with the property clause is that it defines territory or property belonging to the United States without defining what that property is. And so we have issue with, you know, the Bundys, with the BLM, with all of the Western lands that are owned by the federal government. They're called into question when it comes to the property clause, because the property clause does not effectively define what the federal government can or cannot own. And again, for the listeners, that's Article 4, Section 3, Clause 2.
Very good analysis. Very good. Wow. So where does this bring us? What's the sum total of all this? And you have the fact that you have armed men, at this compound. You have the government surrounding them. You have the Obama administration hoping that something goes wrong. You have us talking about it, hoping that, you know, we can maybe grab an ear to get some sense into them so that we can all come home peacefully and we're all fine. Where does this, what's the sum total? Where does this leave us? And that's my question.
My sense is that we're looking at a stand down that's eventually going to happen. If the stand down doesn't happen, this goes two ways. The first way is that it goes the way of Bunkerville, where the government stands down to the armed citizens, to the armed people. I don't think that was a very favorable thing for the government to have seen in the general public. And given statements made by Barack Obama that in 2016 he is quote unquote going for broke, I don't think that's in line with his goals for disarmament or for gun control or anything that lines up with his base. The bigger concern is that if it goes the other direction, if it goes the direction of a siege, as was previously mentioned. By the way, siege mentality, is an awful thing. I don't think that any military tactician would say, "Hey, we're going to walk into a siege."
Right.
I think that's one of the dumbest.
Right.
I'm a Navy veteran. I've written for Proceedings magazine and the magazine of the United States Naval Institute. And looking at naval history, looking at military history, no military mind has ever said we are going to go into a place where we intend to be ringed by the enemy and then wait it out. That's the dumbest thing that could ever be thought of.
Exactly.
So I don't know where these guys.
Do you think that it's possible that they do have an exit strategy at this point? I mean, they can't just be going in there without any thought. I mean, they must have, I imagine, they must have thought this out a little bit. So, yes, we're entering into a siege position where it doesn't make any sense to me, but I'm sort of hoping that they do have an exit strategy. Maybe that exit strategy is to stand down, but would standing down do anything? But before anybody answers that, I have a lot of callers live online and a lot of people just coming in, and I just want to let them know what we're talking about. So we have a huge incident today in the state of Oregon. We have a family there who is fighting the federal government over land issues, and they decided to take the route of putting together a people's grand jury in order to fight the government, and they were doing this in a lawful way. They even put together their own militia who was going to execute on a presentment, or another word for it would be indictment, because the law enforcement agencies were not executing on these indictments of evidence that public officials committed crimes. Okay, so what do they do? Well, they put together a militia so that the militia can execute on these presentments or indictments against officials accused of crimes. Now, the Bundy people, from what I understand, they, you know, became familiar with the case because of the similarities and probably sympathized with the Hammonds and came in to offer assistance. Now, they didn't just come in yesterday. They've been there for a couple of weeks now, maybe more. And the siege, which took place, I'm not sure if it was last night or to this morning, so they end up taking over a federal building, which some of my guests are kind of talking about the legal about, you know, who owns it, the federal government, the state, the city, you know, can they do that? What is their options? We're sort of coming to the conclusion that they don't have many because now the government can take away their phone service, their food, you know, they could just really hold them in there and until they're dead, you know, really. Or another option for the government can be because they just passed a new law saying that they can use drones to bomb innocent Americans. This is what's going on in our country in the big picture. And the big picture is that the government is, they took the Constitution and they threw it in the garbage. And they said, we don't want to use this because we don't want you to have rights. You don't want, we don't want you to get a hearing. We don't want you to get notice. We want to be able to do whatever we want to you, whenever we want. This is wrong. And again, this is not everyone that works for the federal government is doing this. People inside the federal government understand this is happening, and they don't want it to happen either. But the reality is that we have to convince the public that the mainstream media, they're not going to give you this information. They don't want you to, you know, they'll call us conspiracy theorists. They'll call, you know, they'll call us names. And sometimes calling somebody a name seems to be, you know, sufficient. And they do that without any evidence. But because it's beaten into you on every news channel, you know, that the government is great and you are wrong and you're a conspiracy theorist and you must be a terrorist and the government has to keep us safe. And they're just brainwashed into this. And so part of the reason why I have my show, Imploding the Illusion, is because I'm trying to implode this illusion into the truth. And the way that I do that is by bringing in experts who can talk about it intelligently, and we can have a discussion. So that's where we're at right now. And I want to bring in my co-host, Efren Gonzalez. He has also called in. Have you been listening? Fred, you're on live. Efren, are you there?
Yeah. Hey. How are you, Raquel? Yes.
I'm pretty
good.
I have
been listening, and one thing I did want to say, I think the commentary has been fantastic because it's very informative. What I did want to add is that just recently, in the last 4 years, I was brought to my attention that the government bought more ammunition under the Obama administration than the three previous administrations combined in terms of 22 cals and, you know.
Absolutely.
It's unbelievable. But this agenda of homeland security is actually homeland sabotage, because what it's doing is it's – and this land grab is primarily with the use of these FEMA camps. I wouldn't be surprised if the government has – an intention to make this federal land into FEMA camps so that they can incarcerate people. And I'm talking about mass incarceration. Now, they'll call me a conspiracy theorist for saying that, but the proof is in the pudding. They're buying strategically land and places. They're seizing it. And they're taking it, and I believe that their agenda is to create total carnage against the people of the United States of America. That's just my opinion.
What do you think about that, Chuck?
I think he's pretty much right, because we see that the system itself is preparing administratively to deal with, or I'm not dealing with is the wrong word, by kidnapping, rounding up Americans and placing them in a marked location where we are marked ourselves, and if we decide to leave, you know, they'll use deadly force on us. There's the Army manual, which I talked to you about at length, and I think you've reviewed that. And that job title that the Army has that pertains to that manual is being staffed right now. It's open. It's an open position that they're looking for people to fill that right now. So he's absolutely right, where the system is already pre-positioning itself to do exactly that.
And if I may add, Raquel, the reason why they were buying all this ammo, and everybody would say, well, conventional wisdom would tell you that they're going to use it against the people, really what it was a double-edged sword. They want to keep it away from the people, and they're not going to tell us where they're keeping it, and then they'll have it when this uprising occurs, and it's going to be very difficult. There are some people, though, who do store ammo, and they protect themselves. Those are good law-abiding gun rights citizens, that they exercise their gun rights, their Second Amendment rights. But to me, a knowledgeable mind is one that knows when to engage, knows when to retreat, and knows when and how to pick their fights. This is going to be the battle of the wills in the next 12 months because Obama is on an agenda. And he will exercise whatever deals he's made with the international community and the powers that be to take it out on us, because I believe that was the overall agenda, was to control the United States of America. And that's what they want to do.
What do you think about that, Bo?
I'm gonna call that a conspiracy theory, and I'm gonna say that there's actually a much more readily available conspiracy, which is not the internment and resettlement operations, but actually UN Agenda 21, which is designed to get us out of the rural areas, and I think that is much more aligned with what we're seeing here with the Bundys and with the Hammonds and with all of these other, you know, kind of rural realignments, with the expansion of massive farming operations from corporate farms like, you know, driven by Monsanto and DuPont and others, that we're seeing a drive towards moving people into these massive city centers, that once people are moved into city centers and out of the rural areas, that then the government has tighter control over people. And effectively what we have then is we have prison cities. We have the ability for them to control access into and out of. I mean, it just takes a cursory view of YouTube and, you know, inland border checkpoints within a 100-mile zone of the borders to understand that we already have internal border checkpoints. It takes a very basic understanding of the fact that now with the Real ID Act and the fact that we have, the inability for certain people of certain states to be able to fly commercially because we have an inland border Papers Act that effectively you have to have a passport that is your state state unconstitutional ID that is now a federal ID that will allow you to travel between state to state, then now we're moving to a place very, very quickly where you will not be able to leave the city that you're assigned to and travel to another city. You will not be able to live in the country. You will not be able to operate a farm because all farms will be operated by globalist corporatist entities that are controlled by the government, that are controlled by para-government organizations. And this is why I think, you know, fascist operations where you have a conflation of government and corporations are very dangerous. And Raquel and I differ on this because I think Donald Trump is a corporate fascist. And I think that that there's definitely danger in blending the corporations with the government, and I think that's where all of this is heading. If you really kind of read between the lines, if you really read the tea leaves, if you read the UN policy papers, if you read the resettlement and internment operations papers, this is where they're trying to move us to.
That is really, really interesting. I understood the part about moving people into the cities, and I agree that's part of the agenda. And you know that we already sort of have these situations, like in New York City. So if you're a New York City resident, while you can come and go as you please, you know you can't have a gun, you can't even have a pocket knife in New York City. So
you can't. You're right.
You can't, you know, so we're talking about, you know, it's almost like it's preparing itself for that place with, you know, the supreme control. And I do think, and I don't disagree with you about the idea of the corporate and the political together, you know, the government and the corporations. And that's what, you know, I think they work hand in hand, quite frankly. I think the government, the corporation, they work, and the media, they all work hand in hand. And they're all against individual just the individual, let's say, like you said, like individuals aren't going to own the farms. Well, they've already, you know, they spent quite a bit of time getting rid of individual farms, you know, over the course of a couple of decades. And I've seen that in upstate New York, of which I own some property in Schoharie County. And that's a real country town. You know, it's a real country town. And it used to be filled with farms. And they're all, you know, slowly but surely, they're just disappearing. And I never really understood why. But I do see that it's easier to contain people, particularly when they're already contained. They already don't have any guns. We already know that. The private citizens just simply cannot get a concealed carry permit in New York City. It's virtually same thing with New Jersey. In New Jersey, forget about it. In fact, New Jersey, it's just illegal to carry, period, with special exceptions.
Exceptions. If you're found with even a round of ammunition in New Jersey, you are going to be sentenced to prison.
Correct.
It's a felony.
Right.
It's incredible.
Right.
I'd love to answer your question about why the farms are disappearing in upstate New York. There's actually an answer, Kelly.
Yes, please. Thank you.
The answer is this is a multi-layered, systematic approach to the Agenda 21. And the multi-layered approach is that banking has actually made it impossible for farmers to be able to farm without getting loans to be able to farm. In order to have the operating capital to be able to buy the seeds that you need to buy every season, you need to be able to get a bank loan. The reason you need to have a bank loan is because Monsanto has made it so that you have to buy the seeds because you cannot seed save. Because if you want to take advantage of their seed programs, and by the way, if you don't take advantage of their seed programs, they will sue you out of existence if you don't buy their seeds, because they will pollute your property with their seeds and then sue you saying that you violated their intellectual property. So now you have to buy Monsanto seeds. And to do that, you have to go to the bank and you have to get a loan. To get a farm loan from the bank, you have to go into incredible debt. You have to mortgage everything you own. And when you cannot pay that back, who owns it? The bank does. Who does the bank sell it to? The bank sells it to corporate farming interests. The corporate farming interests run by Arthur Daniels Midland, run by DuPont, run by subsidiaries of Monsanto and others, these guys are all setting up to provide, you know, they are the Soylent Green of the future. They're literally just turning the entire planet into one big manufacturing machine for them to be able to consolidate us into cities, get us off the farms, and get us into these big prison cities. So when you look at this, you know, from their agenda, and you roll back all the layers, you see that there is no possible way that a person can actually ranch, can farm, can do anything without permission from the federal government, without violating some patent of Monsanto, without getting a bank loan for operating capital. And by the way, this is happening with the Hammonds and the Bundys out in Oregon, because in order for them to be able to pay the high fees that are being placed on them by the BLM, they have to be able to go and get bank loans and operating capital, or they have to reduce their herd size, you know, to basically not be able to produce as many head of cattle within their herds, because they can't afford to pay for the grazing rights for the land that they need to be able to graze a large number of cattle. So they're in constant balance. This is just actuarial. And the actuaries in the government, at the UN level, at the elitists, at the corporatist level, they've already figured this out. And they've decided that we have a plan to get everybody off the farms, to get everybody into the prison cities, and to hand everything over to our corporate interests. And it is happening. And if you can't see it, you're blind to it.
Let me ask you something. So how is it that they were able to manipulate? Did they pay off Congress to pass these laws that make it make the private farmer, you know, push the private farmer out? Is that how they were able to do it? Have they bribed Congress to pass these laws, and then they're like hidden in these omnibus bills that we don't know anything about?
I think the answer is inherent in your question, Raquel. I think you well know that they've been bought off and paid off. I think that you well know that there are lobbyists that have been paid for by these major interests, that all of the laws, all of the bills are written not by lawyers that are in Congress. In fact, nobody in Congress ever sees the bills or even reads the bills anymore. You have a very narrow segment of Congress. You've got folks like Justin Amash and Rand Paul and a few, a narrow band of folks that are actually standing up and pounding their chests and saying, hey, guys, we need to read the bills. But nobody else in Congress is actually complaining about it. They just sign the bills because that's what they're paid to do. You've got Republican congressmen going out and handing out, stacks of cash to people to vote for, tobacco bills. And you've got folks on the Democrat side that are handing out stacks of cash to vote on, bills for Planned Parenthood and other, other left-wing agenda. It doesn't matter which side you're on. At the end of the day, it's the public, it's the average person out there that thinks that they're actually having some effect by actually pulling a lever in a voting booth, when in fact all of the leverage that's held within this country is held by powerful corporations that are pulling the strings through lobbyists that are spending millions and literally billions of dollars buying congresspeople, buying off every seat that they have to be able to get these things done, and writing the laws. They're controlling all of the corporate interests. You look at the conflation between the Supreme Court and pharmaceutical and biotech companies like Monsanto, and you have a huge Justice Clarence Thomas is a former Monsanto guy. How are they?
Yeah.
And never recused himself in any of the things that came before the Supreme Court. So you've got all of these things that keep piling up. And you've got, small ranchers and landowners out there that are just trying to eke out a living. They want to raise their cattle. They want to raise their sheep. I grew up in West Texas, Raquel. I grew up raising Rambouillet sheep. I grew up, working on a horse ranch, most of my teenage years. I know the land. I know what it's like to actually work hard and actually be out there. But you know what? All that's been being taken away from regular Americans, from real Americans who actually want to actually just be able to raise, raise cattle, raise sheep, raise chickens, do whatever they have to do to be able to survive. Because all this is going to, major corporate, farming operations like Hormel and, these major beef operations and things like that. They're all fully corporatized. There's very, very little room for the small guy anymore.
Boy, it's a disaster. Yeah, I'm going to let you talk, Brian, just one second. I just want to let everyone know that I could only do 90 minutes because I have to head out myself. So we have about 8.5 minutes left because at the end of the program we're going to do our tradition, which is sing the Star Spangled Banner, and I'd like everyone to participate in that. I want you to have a last word, and then I want Chuck to have a last word, and then we'll probably be ready to sing. And you don't have a choice. And Bo, you have to join us too. So we're going to sing to West Point Glee Club on Veterans Day. It's an awesome little bit of a fast-paced version, but I think you really like it.
My sincere pleasure.
Awesome. Okay, Brian, go ahead. You got 2 minutes.
What we were saying about the corporate government partnership, in my studies in law, I come across John Locke and his two treaties of government, which goes back to the late 1600s. This is how it's always been, is government and corporations work together to get laws passed to where you're forced to buy their stuff. If you're not going to be part of that, you're not going to be inside it. That's why the farmers that don't want to be part of it are pushed out.
So this is not anything new. It's just they've kind of perfected it, or they've made it gigantic. It's huge. There is no, we don't have any farming anymore. We don't have any production. Everything we buy is from is from China. I mean, we're doing nothing here, and it's not. I don't think it's because we don't want to. I think that the American people are very ingenious and they can do these things, but we're being prevented by the government's law. Was because of the corporate influence. How do we get out of it? How do we get out of it? Chuck?
Well, there is no easy way. Go ahead.
Well, honestly, Raquel, I don't know how we get out of this, but I know that what we're getting into is not something that the American people want. Bringing it back to the standoff, the original issue that this show was convened for, 1 minute can change the course of our life in this country. Things go very fast in an information age and in the time frame that we're currently living in. Tomorrow, the story can be completely different. There could be a series of a set of new variables that we might actually have another, who knows, another show to talk about. But I do know this, if there's a shot fired in anger or even accidental in this issue, it's going to have national ramifications. It's not going to be one of these things where it just happens here. They're going to take this and they're going to rubber stamp something and it'll be imposed on the entire country. And then you really will have a big fight. So what happens in the next 24 to 48 hours can actually set the tone for what this country is going to go through in the next year or so. So we're at a very touchy, very sensitive time frame right now in this country. And I think people need to know that. The guys need to stand down if possible.
And Raquel, if I may, real quick.
Yes, please.
The 24th president of the United States, Grover Cleveland, once said, and that's when media was media, he said, the government needs to understand its limitations, and so does corporations. It is a very fitting and telling sign of what is happening today that we had these problems, maybe not in the same, but they were discussed. We need to find a way to deal with it because this is the greatest adversary facing our people in this country right now.
You know, it's interesting. Grover Cleveland was the favorite president of Ron Paul.
I'm not surprised.
That's good. That is good.
I didn't see that one coming, but thank you. That's amazing.
I think he's going to, like, turn into my favorite president when I start reading up on him.
All we have to do is look back at our history.
I'm a conservative. You know, I love JFK, conservative. I'm really nervous. I agree with Chuck. I would like to see a stand down, and I would like to see everyone to go home safely. I think most of America wants that to happen today. I don't think that this standoff is helping anyone right now. I think maybe it was ill-conceived, but they're in it now, and hopefully there's a means, and hopefully themselves have some means of getting out of this alive without too many repercussions for the American people, which is something that we're very concerned about because we don't want them to use this as a template to go ahead and, you know, continue spying on us, continue taking away our freedom. You know, there's laws under Obama that we can't even grow food in our backyard. People in Florida can't go off the grid. So if you decide that you want to live in the country and you want to use solar power or you don't want to be hooked up to the electricity system, guess what? You can go to jail because you're not allowed to do that by law. So, you know, a lot of these things are, you know, they do come down from the federal government, but they're also, you know, coming from the states. So the states are also being controlled. It's the same process. It's the payoffs. I'll give you this amount of money, you pass this law. This happens on the state level, this happens on a local level, this happens on a federal level, to everyone's detriment. And it seems like it's all going the same way, whether it's a Republican administration, a Democrat administration, doesn't matter. Florida's a purple state. Why is a purple state have gun control laws? Why that other states don't have? Why does a purple state have laws that you can't grow food, that you can't go off the grid, that you have to be on the electrical services? You know, why is that the case? There's a lot of problems, and I hope, and I will continue talking about it on my show every Friday night from 9 to 11 p.m., and the call-in number of this show and also that show, just keep it and save it because it's always the same. It's Eric 347-850-1243. You're listening to Reach Out America Radio, Imploding the Illusion. And I just want to impress upon the people that, the, you know, Insurgency is good. Complaining is good. Redressing your government is good. It just has to be well thought out. And once we can do that and maybe collaborate nationally, first you have to collaborate locally, of course, and then you want to bring that out. You want to bring this information out to the masses, because there's a lot more of us, and I think that there's a lot more of us who love America and who want our country to be the free country that it was meant to be, where you can grow whatever you want, you can build whatever you want, you can own property, and not just own the property, but you own the land behind, underneath it. In fact, you own the air above it, because, you know, the government gets you for the dirt under your house isn't yours. You know, this is how much they've seeped into individual life. Our individual lives, they just completely, you know, taken it over. It's a disaster. We are getting ready to play our music because
Don's
Light
breaking
show.
This morning over the grounds of the United States Military Academy at
nice
West Point, New York. A most solemn place today, Veterans Day, as the country remembers the countless thousands who sacrificed for our freedoms, so many of whom were schooled on these very grounds. 90 years ago, President Woodrow Wilson deemed November 11th Armistice Day, celebrating peace, hearkening to the end of World War I, which had drawn to an official close at the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month of 1918, a peace that remains sought after still. So please join us here on SportsCenter as we begin a very special Veterans Day.
Color. Lock time, arms, color, ready, halt, color, present, arms.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light, what so proudly we hailed at the starlight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars
Talk to you all soon.
Okay.
God bless.